This is the Go Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, IVF, nutrition, gut health, and much more, as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say that this podcast is sponsored by Emma. Emma mattresses are created by an in-house team of sleep experts who use only the best foams and the latest foam technologies. The Emma products are designed with you in mind and sure to have you waking up feeling energetic and refreshed. For a limited time, listeners of the Good Glow Health podcast can save a massive 42% on orders placed through emma-mattress.ie/podcast. You can find these links in this episode's description. This is the last episode of season one of the Good Glow Health. From making a list of our needs, wants and desires in a relationship, how to get glowy skin, the importance of sleep hygiene and the benefits of eating organic food, I've learned so much from all the topics I've covered this season. Thank you so much for all the support for my spin-off podcast. Today, I've saved a very special conversation for my last episode. Myself and Cassie, who owns the podcast studio where I record, were blown away by my guest, his compassion, his kindness, his knowledge. I'm speaking to Dr. Hans Arcet about IVF and fertility, such a sensitive topic for many of us. I hope that if you're about to dip your toe in the world of IVF, that this podcast will help you understand it more. Or if you have a friend or family member that's going through fertility problems or IVF, that maybe this will help you understand what they may be going through. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and review, and I'll chat to you again in season two. Dr. Hans Arcet, Medical Director and Consultant in ReproMed. Welcome to the Good Glow Health.
Thank you, Jordi.
Thank you so much for coming in today. I've been doing a lot of research into fertility, and I think it's a conversation that my listeners are crying out for. I think a lot of us go on these fertility journeys, and it can be a lonely place at times. But I do think in Ireland, we're getting a little bit better at talking about it. You were born in Peru. You studied in Barcelona in Spain. Tell us a little bit about your journey on this path.
Well, my dad's a gynecologist. My sister's a midwife. My mom's an endocrinologist. I guess it's something I never even considered not being. I was always the doctor that loved surgery and deliveries and emergency and the action. But after a while, I guess you start worrying about your heart and keeping it healthy, and that lifestyle is tough. So I started going into fertility medicine, which offered me a better schedule, I guess. But I also knew that it was a huge, huge, huge area of medicine in Spain. Spain is one of the leading countries for this. So I had a brilliant opportunity of training myself in probably one of the best places in the world, while still delivering babies. So I did both things at the same time for a while, which was great. Got patients pregnant, then follow the pregnancy, then deliver the baby, which was a beautiful cycle. And then little by little, I just stopped delivering babies and following the path of fertility, which is just, it's beautiful.
Wow. And what brought you to Ireland then?
I was in charge of the international department. A lot of patients coming mainly from Ireland, England, going to Spain for treatments. So because I speak English, I just was in charge. And little by little, I started really liking Irish patients. And the clinic at that time bought a clinic here in Ireland. So I was offered a position to to work in that clinic. Came here, then I just, you know, moved on, and now I'm in Rupperman and be really happy. It's been 4 years now.
Wow, congratulations on all your success. I myself have 15 frozen embryos in the beacon. IVF to me personally is a blur, because I was told that I had cancer in October. I had just had a baby. My baby was 7 months old. And in November, I found myself in the middle of IVF, and I kind of couldn't get my head around what was happening. And I'd said to my husband, Jamie, my oncologist sat me down and said, look, there's an 80% chance that your fertility will return to normal after the chemotherapy, but, you know, we don't want to take the risk. So I would advise you to go for IVF and try save some embryos. But I remember I said to my husband, like, I can't deal with this right now. If you do it all, you make all the appointments, you line up the injections, I'll do it. So it was a real, it was teamwork, and we did it, and it was very successful for us, thank God. What sort of people are you seeing coming in to your clinic?
First of all, it's always teamwork. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's something that a lot of people don't think of, especially a lot of men don't think of. They feel out. They feel like, you know, a woman's going through a lot more than they are. I think it's wrong. They sell themselves short. It's their support is crucial. Without it, it wouldn't happen. But look, to your question, I would say the average patient I'm seeing now is patients that are either coming for the second child. They had their first child at, you know, their mid-30s, and they're coming for their second child in their later 30s. I'd say the average patient we're seeing right now is around 37-year-old, either coming for the second or even the first baby.
Okay. So that's did you find that when you came to Ireland that people were having babies later than in Spain, for example? No?
No, actually, Ireland is probably one of the countries with the youngest age of first baby. Spain, the age of first baby, when taking the whole population, is somewhere around 31 years, 0.7.
Okay.
That is late for first child. But if you take away the large amount of, you know, Latin American and African immigration that's in Spain, that they tend culturally to have children a lot younger. Mm-hmm. If you only analyze the Spanish females, their age of first baby is somewhere around 34.
Okay.
And that's just make things a little harder.
Yeah.
So a lot of patients won't have a problem, but the patients that will have a problem will just be more. And that's why we mm-hmm. see them more.
I've had a number of conversations with many of my friends. I'm 35 now. So a lot of my friends are going on to second baby mm-hmm. right now. And a lot of them have found it very difficult to have the second baby. And I think when you have the first and it's pretty straightforward and it happens quite quickly, you just never in a million years would think that you would have problems with the second.
Georgie, what happens is we have extracted ourselves from nature. Okay. We need to understand ourselves as I talk to this to all my patients. They're probably tired of hearing me say the same thing over and over again, but we are animals. You know, 99% of my genes are exactly the same as those of a chimpanzee. I mean, we are very beautiful, smart, naked monkeys, Georgie. And we need to understand ourselves as that, because that's what we are. And when nature created us, we were meant to live for 30 to 35 years. The reasons we live 90 years now is because, well, you don't freeze to death anymore. You have clothing and Floratex and houses. You don't starve to death anymore. Mm-hmm. We have our culture and we got medicine. You get cancer, you get cured. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a curable disease.
Yeah.
Infections, vaccinations, broken bones. I would have been eaten by a lion. I broke my knee. Now the lion's in a cage. So originally we were meant to, you know, not have children later than an age that we were not meant to be alive, because who was going to mind our child? Mm-hmm. And that is why our fertility starts dropping mildly after 30, a little faster after 35, a lot faster after 38, and a lot more after 40. Wow. And that is just why.
And as women, we are born with a certain amount of eggs and then our egg count decreases as we age. Whereas men, I think they can still produce sperm, you know.
Hundreds of millions of new sperm every day. Women are born with 1 million eggs. They reach their puberty with 300,000. And then they're going to be using around 500 each month.
500 each month.
So if you, but if you do the math, starting at 300,000, you should run out of eggs between the ages of 40 and 60. And that's why menopause comes at that age. But it's just pure mathematics.
Yeah. So when somebody comes to your clinic, and I found when we went for our first consultation, my mind was blown after it. So much was explained to me. And I think it's really important that, you know, you go for the consultation, keep an open mind and be willing to listen and learn. And that's what we did. And the doctor was explaining to me that I was 32 when I got cancer. And when we would be ready for a second baby, I could be 36, 37. But if we had these frozen embryos, they would be my 32-year-old eggs. They would be able to test these eggs and make sure they were all okay. And when we left the consultation, I said to Jamie, God, I think I'd prefer to get my embryos put back into me than try naturally when I was 37, just because of how well it was explained to us and all the benefits of of freezing my 32-year-old eggs. Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world. What I tell patients is frozen gametes or frozen embryos or frozen eggs or whatever you freeze, I always think of it as a plan B.
Okay.
Because you never know if they're going to work or not. So what I generally tell my patients, that plan B is always going to be there. It's not going to get any worse, but your eggs are. So why not try naturally? And if it works, great. If it doesn't, because what if maybe you want a second child? I mean, your situation, you have 15 frozen embryos. You should have enough to have more babies, as many babies as you want. But not always. Not always people have the luck to have so many frozen embryos. So if they've only been able to freeze, let's say, 10 eggs or 6 eggs, I don't know what those eggs are going to do. So just leave them there. Try naturally. If it works, great. If it doesn't, I start treatment with your eggs. If that doesn't work, then we got to plan B.
Yeah.
Because maybe it does work. And then you come at the age of 43 and you want to have a third child. Now I'm thinking of these eggs here. That's what I would do.
It's great security to have. And I know a busy young couple who just aren't ready yet for a child, but they are going down the road of IVF and they want to freeze embryos just to have.
For
security.
I generally recommend more freezing eggs than embryos. The technology has changed. The freezing survival rates of eggs is as good as embryos. So the reason I always say let's freeze eggs is because, you know, I believe in love, but I also believe that love can end. And if you have frozen embryos, then you wouldn't be able to use those. So I generally recommend freezing eggs. But of course, 3-4 years ago, that was a different story. That's what I recommend now. And I strongly recommend it, yes, because it's just so more common, you know, girls that are 32 or 33 that they know they don't want to have kids for the next 4 or 5 years. Because let's face it, you know, there's master's degrees, there's doctorates, there's work, there's, you know, so much social pressure, so much economical pressures. Salaries are not half as good as they used to be. So yeah, people can't afford kids, you know, now. But they can't afford to freeze eggs.
I think it's really reassuring what you're saying about freezing eggs, because I was under the impression that, and just through the media and, you know, what you pick up over the years watching various TV programs, that freezing embryos is a much better idea. But I often wondered if I was single and I had gotten a cancer diagnosis, or I was, you know, just a single girl in my 30s, you know, is there any point in freezing your eggs? But absolutely there is.
Absolutely there is. And that is routine practice in Spain. routine practice. Of course it is.
Wow.
It empowers women. Women should have kids when they want to have kids, not when their ovary tells them to have kids.
Mm.
And they're nowadays are giving a fantastic option of, you know, not having to worry, not having that, which is such a hate, these comments that you hear, you know, in you know, society that the clock is ticking and
yeah.
all. It's just such, so much pressure women are put in, and it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I like to use this platform to really tell people to stop with these questions, stop with these comments, because it's so unfair, because I see it in patients and it's not good.
It's definitely your biological clock is ticking is a phrase I think that was used way more back in the 80s and 90s and less so now. I think people are more aware of saying things like that. And when it comes then to freezing your eggs or embryos, I personally myself was like, what happens? You know, where are they? Are they just in a fridge in the Beacon?
Like, next to the meat.
Yeah, and the pint of milk.
Fish. Like, well, so these are nitrogen tanks.
Okay.
So they're frozen in these nitrogen tanks that are minus 197 degrees Celsius. So it's very cold. And yes, these tanks are big, and there's embryos from different patients, and they're all in little straws that are called, they're literally like kind of like little straws on the tip. There's a little embryo right there.
Wow.
Or two eggs or three eggs or whatever. And they're like hanging there and all surrounded by this liquid nitrogen that just keeps them vitrified. Now we don't freeze embryos, now we vitrify them. So
okay.
We dehydrate them first. Because what happens when you forget a beer bottle in the freezer?
Mm-hmm.
It explodes, right?
Yeah.
Same thing was happening to embryos before and eggs.
Right.
So so now we've discovered that if you dehydrate these embryos or eggs and then freeze them really quickly, they kind of turn into glass, which is why it's called vitrification. You know, vitro is like the vitroceramic in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So they turn into glass. And the survival rates of that method are extraordinary. 95%, 90% survival rates, which is great. And the results of the transfers of frozen embryos and frozen eggs are as good as fresh, if not even better.
So when a couple come to you, how long would they have to wait to get started on this journey?
They can start with the next period. Unless there's testing to be done, unless there's an issue to be fixed previously, they could start the very next day. I mean, like, you know, in cancer patients, you don't have time to wait and results are as good.
Yeah. And would you have young girls who maybe have been diagnosed with cancer in their early 20s or late teens? Are girls like that freezing eggs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Actually paid by the government now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's brilliant. In terms of emotional support, and I'm sure you've seen every different type of person coming into your office. And like we said, sometimes it can be such a lonely journey. And I know you're particularly interested in the well-being of couples.
Mm.
And you've spoken about that. What sort of emotional support is there available to them?
I mean, every fertility clinic should have a counselor, either on site or someone that works with them that has, you know, a little specialized in this topic, in this area. It is necessary. It is necessary. It's not mandatory. Some patients are just, you know, let's get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And some patients do need the support. I recommend two things. Number one, if you feel the pressure, you should have a counseling, at least one session. But especially, I think people should rely more on their loved ones. And sadly, people keep this as a secret. Like if they were doing something wrong, people are very outspoken about their lung diseases or their kidney infections or their broken bones. And they are completely reserved about their fertility journey. And then that's exacerbated by the typical questions, you know, when are you going to have kids? When they've been trying for 2 years, mm-hmm. which is the other question I generally encourage patients to be outspoken whenever they're asked, stop asking these questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think fertility treatment should be an open topic. I think fertility treatment is nothing, you're not doing anything wrong. You're actually, you know, doing something brilliant here and it shouldn't be a problem to talk about these things.
And do you think we're moving in the right direction in terms of conversation around
this? Yes, I think Ireland is definitely moving in the right direction, but it's still a long path to go.
It's patient blaming almost in the media. When I remember when I was diagnosed with cancer, I was like, oh, and it took me a long time to admit it to myself that I felt shame. And I wondered if, you know, like, did I have negative thoughts? Did that give me cancer? Or, you know, was it because I had two coffees a day? Or, you know, you're picking up this information all the time in the media that that is wrong. And I thought, you know, I'm still on maternity leave. I could hide my cancer diagnosis. I could disappear for a year and just come back to work and say I wanted extra time with my baby. But I thought, no, I'm not going to be ashamed of this, because this is my truth. This has happened to me and I actually did nothing wrong. And I think we're seeing that a lot now with fertility, that people are like, whose fault is it? Which one of you has something wrong with you? And that can be so tough for people.
Super tough. And if you go into the internet and just look everything about fertility, you see words like my body rejects the embryo, my immune system is rejecting the embryo, all this talk, all these choices of words are, I don't know, if destined to cause guilt, because guilt is a, you know, multi-billion euro business, or it's just an unfortunate choice of words that then cause this feeling. Because, yeah, the majority of my patients will ask me that question, is my body rejecting my baby? And there's not a single medical condition that we know, at least, of a body rejecting babies. It's not like that. There's no faults. I mean, it's not because you had a glass of wine. I mean, that's another one. You see the long, eternal, just never-ending list of things couples need to do nowadays to have a baby. And obviously, none of them are evidence-based, and most of them are bollocks. Sorry for the word.
No.
Oops. I mean, for example, the typical one is alcohol. I mean, studies show that a little bit of alcohol can even improve fertility. But first thing people do is you can't even look at a glass of wine. Otherwise, that's because I'm not getting pregnant. I can't go to the gym. It's just such a huge list of nonsense that people put themselves through. And the problem is, when you do that, it's impossible to follow 5,000 indications. So if things don't work, you will find out what you didn't do. Didn't work because of that. It's my fault. And that's not okay.
Yeah, I think we're just wrong. Programmed because we're looking for an answer.
Yeah.
Like I still don't know why I got breast cancer when I was 32. I'll never know. But I could absolutely make myself sick again, wondering and worrying and blaming myself. And I think that's a really nice side of you, is that you speak about that with patients. I think it's really, really important.
It is. It is. I see their relief when I mention these things. The other one is stress. Look, there is one study that showed, by looking for some enzyme in the saliva, that patients that had high levels of stress got pregnant less through treatment. But we have like 99 other studies that haven't found that. Okay. And just the fact that it's 40 years into fertility medicine, we're still talking about this, just shows that if there is any benefit, if there is any effect of stress, I mean, it's not as important. And what I always tell my patients, though, guys, the countries with the highest fertility indexes in the world are countries devastated by civil war and famine. So, I mean, no, it's not stress. Stressed out couples do have less sex, though. Impairs fertility.
Yeah, okay. Right.
But
that's a perfect way to explain it. You're just not having sex because you're stressed. So there you go.
It's hard to get pregnant, right? You're not sex.
So if you're trying for a baby, and it took us, I think, about five months to get pregnant with Pia, but we finally downloaded a fertility app. I don't know how you feel about them.
Terrible. Hate them.
Yeah, so they're not accurate, are they?
Not only are they not accurate, I think they just add stress, which is not, as I said, it's not as important, but it's just, it's a path that should be, you know, followed with love and happiness, not stress and
schedules.
Oh, it's time to have sex because my app is telling me. Mm-hmm. So when studies are done on what couples can do to improve their natural fertility, the one constant answer is have more sex. Mm-hmm. Because out of the 100 million spermatozoa man ejaculates, only 100 make it to the fallopian tube.
Okay.
So if you have a sex twice, there's going to be 200. If you have sex three times, it's going to be 300. If you have sex every day, it's just an additive number, and spermatozoa will live 5 to 7 days. So what happens when people start having sex only when they're ovulating? In turn, they're having less sex. Mm-hmm. In turn, there's less spermatozoa.
Yeah.
So these apps, these ovulation sticks, these things work for couples that do not want to have sex, and that's respectable. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to have sex once a month, do it when you're ovulating. Mm-hmm. But if you are having regular intercourse, then having less sex to get pregnant, does that make sense?
No.
It doesn't really, does it?
Yeah. Very interesting. I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first I wanted to tell you a little more about Emma. Made right here in Ireland, the Emma mattress comes with a 10-year guarantee and is delivered for free and straight to your front door. If you're not 100% convinced, you can return it hassle-free for a full refund. Try Europe's most awarded mattress now for 200 risk-free nights and discover the secret to a great night's sleep. The Emma mattress consists of 3 high-quality foams that perfectly adapt to your body to offer you the right amount of support, pressure relief and comfort, while the breathable materials help keep you cool even during the warmest nights. Just the thing you need to wake up feeling energetic and refreshed. Now, back to the conversation. And tell us about the options for same-sex couples, because I think that is also something that you don't really hear much about. It's not really, there's not that much information that I would see freely available. Maybe if you go looking for it, it's there. But what are the options?
It is there. Look, I mean, the classical option would be using sperm donor and doing insemination. Okay,
yeah.
So the reason we do inseminations, there was self-insemination that has been closed now by the government, which were patients that would just purchase sperm from a bank in Denmark. The sperm would be flown here and they would just, you know, see when they were ovulating and that day thaw the sample at home and just, you know, use that sample on by their own. That does work, but the sperm from donors is very expensive. So if you're going to use a sperm that's very expensive, try to maximize your chances and try to minimize the invasiveness. Mm-hmm. So do the insemination. What's an insemination? Putting the sperm inside the uterus, because 99% of the spermatozoa will die either in the vagina or not make it through the cervical mucus.
Okay.
So if you bypass that and just deliver that sample there, then instead of those 100 spermatozoa I was talking about, it's a few million.
So the sperm then would get delivered to
the clinic,
and then you guys would do that.
Exactly.
Right.
Now that's the only path allowed because of the new legislation. Mm-hmm. And so that's all very regulated now. Then there's an option B, which is, you know, stimulate one of the ovaries in one of the patients to get the eggs, form the embryos, but then transfer the embryos to the other partner. That's something that that it's starting to happen here.
Right.
That is something that we were doing this for a while in Spain. It's very cute.
And then what would the options be for two men?
That's what we were talking about earlier. That sadly, their option is obviously egg donation, which is available. Mm-hmm. The problem is surrogacy.
Yeah.
So getting a surrogate mom, most of the countries in the world would allow it, but they don't allow surrogate mothers to be paid, to be compensated. So that pretty much reduces their possibilities of finding a surrogate to almost zero, unless they have a sister or somebody
who will do it for them.
But it's very, very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. And is it quite rare then for two men to go down that road of a sister or a friend?
I would look, not with us. I haven't seen it yet in Ireland. I've seen it in Spain, but since they have to go somewhere else where the surrogate is, mm-hmm. then they end up just having the treatment in that country.
Yeah.
And usually that's Ukraine nowadays in
yeah.
Europe.
And I think Rosanna Davison spoke so wonderfully, openly about her journey and her surrogate in Ukraine. And she's a gorgeous baby now. If say, for example, I was to get a surrogate in Ukraine and my embryos are here in Dublin, is the journey to Ukraine safe? Yeah, or absolutely. Are you at risk of losing?
Oh, no, not at all. Think that, I mean, 100% of the egg donation programs in Ireland now work with clinics outside Ireland because of the same problem. Ireland does not allow compensation for egg donation. So we are sourcing our eggs from a sister clinic in Finland. So what we do is we freeze the male sperm here. We fly it to Finland. In Finland, we stimulate the ovaries of the donor, get the eggs, form the embryos, freeze the embryos over there, fly them here, and do the transfers here. So patients don't have to leave Ireland now.
Oh, it's so fascinating because I interviewed a girl on The Good Glow called Nadia, who, like myself, had been through cancer and they froze embryos, and she sent her embryos to America. But she actually tracked the flight that they were on. It was an Aer Lingus plane, just a regular flight. And
but there's a guy with a little container with the embryo there. Yeah.
And is it an actual person brings them?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And sits on the flight?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I often wondered, were they like in the, you know...
That when, for example, things that are not as valuable as embryos, like sperm, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if you lose a sample of sperm, you just get another one.
Yeah.
Embryos are very precious.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to be at another level. And that's why it's expensive to get embryos. They have to be in a courier.
But it's good to know though that you are in contact with all of these clinics around Europe and you're always in communication with each other. And I'm
constantly.
Sure your patients are so reassured once they're in the system with you guys as to the entire process.
It is. Yeah. I mean, the HPRA here is a very, very strict and I'm glad it is actually. So they are the Cells and Tissues Regulatory Organization in Ireland, and everything has to have absolute traceability down to the last minutes, where the egg was obtained, where, who was the biologist that got it, how was everything. Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to test then if you have embryos or you have eggs that the quality of them?
So the one thing we can do is test the embryos for the genetics. So many times when doctors talk about quality, they're talking really, it's a cosmetic grading that we do with embryos. That embryo is pretty. Okay, that's a 4AA. Very pretty. That's a 5AA. You know, it's not that pretty. Maybe a 3BB. Okay. But really, we don't know. So, for example, at 35, if I have a very pretty embryo, that embryo has around a 50% chance of actually being genetically normal and a 50% chance of being genetically abnormal.
Right.
Okay. So, it's the genetic context is the main mechanism nature chose to make our fertility, as the naked monkey I was talking before, not very high. Think that animals that live for long periods cannot have a high fertility. Mm-hmm. Imagine if we had 200 babies a year like rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there needs to be a limiting factor. For example, the rabbit ovulates 20 eggs, humans ovulate one, and the rabbit, 98% of their embryos are normal. In the human being at 35, 50% are abnormal.
Okay.
So we got tests to choose from those embryos, which are genetically normal and genetically abnormal. But there's other factors of quality that we still don't have tests for.
But it's so, like, the research into this is just so incredible, isn't it? In terms of from an egg retrieval, say a lady goes in and you do an egg retrieval, how long would she have to wait then to implant?
So if we don't have to freeze the embryos, if we do the egg collection normally 14 days after she got her period on average, and then 5 days later, we do the transfer of that first embryo, freeze the rest, and 10 days later do the pregnancy test. So within a month, we know if we got pregnant or not. Now, there's a few patients, more and more now, that have a lot of eggs retrieved. And those patients, then we recommend to freeze all the embryos because then they can go into a risk of something called hyperstimulation syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's so manageable now that when in doubt, we freeze all embryos because, as I told you before, frozen embryos are, if not better than fresh now. So we freeze and then the transfer would happen 4 weeks later. So, so if we do a segmented cycle, that would be 7 weeks, 8 weeks.
Wow. And you find out so quickly then if you're pregnant or not. Yeah. And is that through a phone call or do people?
They come in for a blood sample and we give them blood sample. Yeah. The results from a phone call. Are you pregnant or not? If you're pregnant, I'll see you in 3 weeks for a scan.
Wow. Oh my God. You would do a scan that early.
Yeah, yes. We need to confirm the pregnancy is going well. And at 7 weeks, if everything's fine, goodbye.
Wow.
Yeah. It's magic.
It is really just so incredible and gives people so much hope.
Yeah.
You know, in such a hard time if they may be struggling. And in terms of twins or triplets, I think back in the day, you don't hear about IVF, people having six babies and things like that.
God, no.
How did that happen?
Look, it sadly still happens sometimes. And oh, God, it just kills me. So remember I told you that 50% of your embryos are bad?
Mm-hmm.
And remember I told you that you didn't like freezing embryos because the water expanded and broke the embryos?
Yes.
So I was terrified of transferring the bad embryo because I told you all I'm seeing is that the embryo is pretty.
Yeah.
Right? And freezing the good one. Damaging the good one.
Yeah.
And then you don't get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So I took risks and I transferred two embryos. That way I doubled my chances that one of them was good.
Mm-hmm.
But can you flip a coin twice and have heads twice? Of course you can. Those are the twins.
Okay.
But the invention of vitrification happened in 2008, 2009. Since then, there's no need to transfer two embryos. Since then, all you need to do is transfer one, freeze the other one.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't work, just come and transfer the other one.
Yeah.
And the problem is, remember I was saying that we were designed to not have a very high fertility. Your womb is designed to have one baby at a time. I put two babies in there. Every single risk in pregnancy has as a main risk factor twins. So if I get you pregnant of twins during a treatment, I'm giving each of your children up to 10 times higher risks mm-hmm. of having a problem. So why?
Yeah.
If we're not gaining anything.
So if I came to you and said, please put two embryos, you'd say no.
I can't say no until next year because the law next year will make it illegal to transfer two. This is how serious it is.
Wow.
It will be illegal to transfer two embryos in Ireland next year.
Because of the risk.
Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would do my best to convince you not to. And I do a good job.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do.
And if I can't, I document it.
The girl that I was speaking about, Nadia, that I had on my podcast, she had, I think, six embryos. She flew them to America. And then on the day of the implantation, they only had one. So they got damaged or they thawed or something happened and she only had one. And, you know, she was quite hopeful that it would work and she prayed. And so they put one embryo into her surrogate and they rang her 6 weeks later and said she was having twins.
Okay.
So that embryo split.
Split in two and they're identical twins, yes.
Yes.
That's nothing you can do to avoid that.
Yeah, and that's just pure chance.
Less than 1% chance.
Less than 1% chance of that happening. And then that happened and it was her last embryo. So it was her miracle, miracle twins.
There you go. Look, twins, I'm not an advocate against twins.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't get me wrong. I am, twins are very cute. But when it happens, we can deal with it. But never look for it. Never look for a high-risk pregnancy.
Yeah, because your job is to keep these women safe and, you know, keep everyone as healthy as possible.
Exactly. And I always tell my patients, I know that your main objective right now is to have a positive pregnancy test.
Mm-hmm.
That is not mine.
Yeah.
Mine is to give you a healthy child.
Yeah.
And I know that the best chances of you to having a healthy child is by transferring one embryo at a time.
Mm.
So that, when I say that, most of the times I get the message.
What do you say when it doesn't work?
I'm sorry. But I put a lot of context and I always give the speech, not because it failed once. It means there is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that for me to tell a couple that they have fertility issues, I need to let them try 12 months. Georgie, that's 12 failed attempts.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is that when you're doing IVF, it's very emotionally tough and very expensive.
Yeah.
But the fact that one transfer doesn't work doesn't mean there's a problem. I could have just transferred the wrong embryo.
Mm-hmm.
While we were talking, it's a flip of a coin,
yeah.
Georgie. And depending by age, even worse.
And is there anything that you can do after the IVF and implantation that you can do to help yourself?
Emotionally, yes. Stay, you know, don't lie down. Going against the typical recommendation after a transfer. Actually, there's evidence saying that if you lie down, it's worse. So women that stay active get pregnant more. Exercise is good. Intercourse, some small studies say it might help a little bit.
Really?
Folic acid, vitamin D, pretty much that's all you can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing really more after that. Your lifestyle, I mean, unless after transfer. So the things are, if you have obesity, maybe lose weight. If you smoke, definitely stop. Other than that, there's not much more.
Yeah.
Healthy diet as always, but, you know.
It's just all these, this balance in your life that helps.
And understanding the, you know, the evidence. We have evidence that say that people that eat Mediterranean diets have less infertility than people that eat only fish and chips. But does changing your diet immediately improve your fertility? We don't have studies for that.
Mm-hmm.
We have studies that, yeah, I mean, it's always a good idea. And if you're trying to conceive, yes, of course. But don't think that that's going to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Nor don't think that if you don't do that, that's never going to work. Because mm-hmm. we don't have that evidence, really.
Are you seeing couples and women coming back to you with their babies?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
They're the good
days?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I still have patients from Spain that every birthday send me a little photo. And yeah, of
Do
course.
You? That's
oh,
incredible.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And would you guess, would it be a kind of miracle to get two babies out of, or two or three babies from one egg retrieval? Or does that
happen? No. That's why what I tell my patients, don't be afraid. I'm going to hit your ovaries really hard. I always make that joke because number of eggs matter. So nowadays we've changed. Laboratories and results have gotten so good that now we're not talking as a success live birth. We're talking cumulative live birth.
Mm-hmm.
So how many babies can we have out of one cycle of stimulation? So you don't have to go through this again.
Mm.
I have patients that have, 19 embryos frozen, 18 embryos frozen, 16 embryos frozen. They're pregnant to the first child. They're probably going to come back and that's all their family and Yeah.
Thank you so much, because I've learned so much, but I think the biggest thing I've taken from this today, which I think is absolutely wonderful, is that freezing your eggs is hugely successful now. And that is just such great news, and I'm sure it will be so reassuring for so many people listening.
Oh, it should be. It should be. It is very reassuring.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to find out more information, they can listen to the Fertility Matters podcast with yourself and Susan Keogh and many of your colleagues in ReproMed. And I just found it so informative. Susan is a brilliant interviewer. And I suppose there's four episodes there. So it's much more in-depth conversations. And she even interviews a couple who have
yes.
been through the process, mm-hmm. which is so informative. And where else can people get information?
In our webpage.
Yeah.
We have designed a really user-friendly webpage. You can just book online, book all your tests online, book your initial consultation online. We're just making it as easy as it can be because it's hard enough already.
And is COVID-19 making things more difficult at the moment?
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. We stopped for a month and a half until we found out that getting women pregnant was safe.
Mm-hmm.
During the pandemic, we've discovered it seems to be. So yes, now we're open for every type of treatments. Again.
That's brilliant. And thank you so much for the work that you do and giving so many people so much reassurance and helping us grow our families. I mean, it's absolutely the best gift you could ever give someone in life. So thank you so much.
It's teamwork. And thank you, Georgie. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Sally Hansen. As we all find ourselves washing our hands so much more these days, why not take better care of our nails with Sally Hansen's Cuticle Oil or Complete Care 7-in-1. You can shop the products at grocery stores and pharmacies nationwide, such as Dunn Stores and Macaulay's Health and Beauty, and online too. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. And for more on my story, follow me on Instagram, Georgie.Paul.